So, your question, what? So, you're saying in India, now they are saying that there's only one bird in the tree. So, the question is, especially in India, but even in any religious circles, everything has to be confirmed by the scriptures, whether it's the Bible or the Quran or Hindu scriptures. No bona fide saint or preacher can invent his own philosophy. So it is very clear in the Upanishads, the statement is given, the analogy is given that there are two birds sitting on a tree. That analogy in the Upanishads is given to understand the difference between Atma and Paramatma. The same description is given by Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Uddhava Gita. He gives the same exact analogy of the two birds sitting in the tree, how one bird is self-satisfied, the other bird flying from branch to branch, tasting the different fruits. And those two fruits are happiness and distress, because that's the only choices you get in this material world. You could say there's a third choice, a mixture of happiness and distress. That basically, that's what it is. So if anybody in India is saying, no, there's only one, then the question is, which Shastra is he getting that from? Or is that his new philosophy? Is that his interpretation? Because it used to be, because this is not a new thing, it used to be the clever Mayavadis would say, yes, at a certain level there's two birds, but when you become self-realized, then the two birds become one. So I don't know exactly what they're saying, okay? But if they're saying there's only one bird, then it seems to me this particular person is now inventing a new concept, which is not there in the Vedas themselves. You follow what I'm saying? Just like a lawyer. The lawyer makes his case, but he has to give the evidence by Haribo. He has to give the evidence according to the law. He can't introduce a new law in the law court, can he? No judge will allow a lawyer to introduce his own law. For instance, maybe you have this experience in India, but I just saw a TV show. You've seen this TV show, Law and Order? I'm sure you guys. Okay? So in this particular episode of Law and Order, this fundamentalist Christian was saying the reason why he killed this teacher was because, according to the Bible, this teacher was teaching a doctrine in the school which was going to harm his daughter. And according to his understanding of the Bible, God was going to, you know, destroy his daughter because she had, you know, accepted this weird philosophy that's against the Bible. So he killed the teacher in order to protect his daughter. And so his defense in the law court was, hey, this is my belief. But that doesn't matter. In a court of law, just like I'm sure in India, the Muslims will say, well, this is correct because I'm just following my Muslim dharma. But no, the law has to be the same for everybody. You can't have, okay, for the Muslims, it's okay to do this, this, this. Or another example. Here in America, polygamy is not allowed. Now, the Mormons will say, but in our religion, we're allowed to have so many wives. That may be your religion, but it's not permitted by the law. You can't have different laws going on. Okay, for these people, it's okay. They can do that. There can only be one law. Correct? Otherwise, it's nonsense. So, getting back to my question would be to this particular, whoever is presenting this, where is this in the Vedic scriptures? Then we can proceed from there. Fair enough? No, that's what the Mayavadis say. That is their interpretation. That also is nowhere contained in the Vedic scriptures. In other words, Mayavadis or impersonalists have this tendency to juggle things and twist things. It all came from Shankaracharya. That's where it all comes from. He was expert at that. Okay? Twist it. And lawyers do that all the time. That's what lawyers do. They take the law where it seems to be ambiguous, then by their expert linguistics, present the case, and if the jury's not sharp, sometimes a guy will get away scot-free for committing murder on some technicality. So, you know, like Prabhupada's Gita, Bhagavad Gita as it is. There's no twisting there. It's exactly what's being presented. So again, yes, the Mayavadis say that ultimately the two birds become one. That can be accepted in the sense that they become one on the same page or one in purpose, but not they become one identity. Because one of the first things Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita is that you're eternally an individual. There's the whole impersonal understanding is that, and which was Shankaracharya's main teaching, is that ultimately we all become one with no individuality. That was one of the main preachings of Shankaracharya. That if you see duality, that's an illusion. Shankaracharya taught that in the ultimate end, there's only one Brahman. But Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes it very clear. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. Neither in the future shall any of us cease to be. So in India, or in any religion, you're going to come down to two schools of presentation. Personalism and impersonalism. Even Christianity deals with this. Okay? So, and you'll see in the Bhagavad Gita, I think we even did a class here. Arjuna asks that question in chapter 12. Should I worship you personally or should I worship you impersonally? And Krishna says, in my opinion, you should worship my personal form. So it comes down to this. Is your presentation, is your outlook ultimately aiming towards an impersonal understanding of the absolute truth or a personal? And these two schools will fight to the end of time, like the Jews and the Palestinians. That ain't going to go away because each hates each other since day one. You follow? Or Muslims and Hindus, ever since you had the division, right? When you got independence, then all the Muslims were sent to Pakistan and you had Hindustan, right? And artificially now, it was created, this tension, right? Wasn't there before. Prabhupada speaks about it, that before partition, even during the British occupation, Muslims and Hindus got along great. Prabhupada even says that many times Muslims would go to Hindus' homes for Janmashtami programs. And Hindus would also go to Muslim home, you know, just socially. You know, there was none of this, you know, friction which we now see. Right? Like that.
Prabhupada, excuse me, question when you say impersonal and personal.
Okay. Okay, so in other religions, because objectively speaking, when it comes to the subject of religion, okay, Christianity, Muslim, right, they are ABC level. When you come to Hinduism, now you're in college level. No, this is objective. You're talking to someone who was raised on the Bible. The difference between the Bible and the Bhagavad Gita is like the difference between a bicycle and a BMW. Okay? Now, in the Bible, the essence of religion is there. The essence. Okay? Now, I haven't studied the Quran, so I can't speak. All right? But I would be safe to say, in any religion, even if it's ABC, you know, if you have the brain, you should find the essence. And that essence of religion is there. So, if a Christian, all right, he may not understand Krishna, because to come to the level of understanding Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, that says, that takes many births to get there. That's, you know, you've heard me say this many times. You're taking birth as a Hindu, and this is not ordinary. You have been taking birth many, many lifetimes to get to this point. Okay? This is not a fly-by-night cheap thing. This is, you've earned this over lifetimes. It's not by chance. Okay? So, let's talk about the other religions. In the other religions, if they accept God, the concept of God, as the supreme person, they may not have much information, but if they at least accept the principle that God is ultimately the supreme person, then they are going to achieve not exactly the same result as somebody who worships Krishna in full knowledge. But they are going to get great benefit. They may even go to the kingdom of God because they accept that personal understanding of God. In the Bible, there's not much information about God. There's hardly any. He's a burning bush. He's a voice. Even Jesus, there's no description of what Jesus is. You see what I'm talking about? It's very elementary presentation of God. And this is why I said, when you come to the Hindu scriptures, you're now in the college level. Because now, you read Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahma Sanghita. God, we know what he looks like. We know what he likes to eat. We know who his girlfriends are. We know who his wives are. We know tons of stuff. So, there's a big difference. That's a fact. That's not something I'm just saying to make you feel good. Yeah. Yeah. Good enough? Are we okay? Okay, wait, one at a time. One at a time. Let her finish. Go ahead. But that's a different question. When did I say one with God? Yeah.
You have your individuality and you have God. So there's two, you say that two birds cannot be one. So God is one, but we all
Yes. So you want to become, so you want to lose your individuality?
I want to lose my identity. Because that identity caused me ego, that identity caused me problems in the world, saying this is Muslim, this is Christian, this is Hindu.
Okay. Okay. So let me now tell you something. According to the Hindu scriptures, what you can get what you want temporarily only, not permanently. Temporarily, you can merge and become one with God. Eventually, you will fall down. You will take birth again. So, do you want a temporary liberation or permanent? This is what the Hindu scriptures say. You can get what you want, but it's temporary. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not forcing anything on you. I'm just pointing out that you can get this impersonal liberation, but it's temporary. Eventually, you will come back down. Why? Because the fact of the matter is, you are an individual. Eternally.
Okay, let's say even if I have to come back.
Yeah.
I would want to fall back with the same mentality that I have right now. That because the way I'm seeing the whole world is with all sorts of that chaos about dividing religion and all that, and thinking I'm better than you, I would wish that I would fall back in the same mentality that I have right now.
Well, that... That's all. You can have that because you can repeatedly merge, come back. You can. But Krishna consciousness is offering you permanent liberation. Why wouldn't you want that? Something to think about. You wanted to speak. Hold on, hold on. All right. When you get it back. Yes, sir. Now the question is, because I know, if I ask any Hindu person, let's say I'm in any temple, and I say, how many of you believe in Krishna? Almost everyone's going to raise their hand. That's not the question. What is your understanding of Krishna? Like, I believe in Barack Obama. I believe he's an idiot. Or I believe he's, you know what I mean? Okay. Okay, so you believe, okay, that's all right. You accept some of Krishna. That's, you respect personal, but you think the impersonal is superior to the personal. Yes. All right. That's, yes. Yes. Yes, because if you were disrespectful to Krishna, the person, then you would become a Mayavadi. You're not a Mayavadi. You're an impersonalist. There's a difference. Shukadeva Goswami was originally a personalist. I mean, impersonalist. Then when he heard Bhagavatam, he became a personalist. The four Kumaras were originally impersonalists. When they met Narayan personally, they became personalists. Did your point get lost? No. Your point didn't get lost. But you're speaking on a different thing. You're talking about don't waste this particular birth. But that's a different discussion. It's a different discussion. It's good. It's just a different, you know, you're introducing a different topic. Okay. Here's the thing. If I may say, okay, the most difficult thing to do is to change people's minds what to speak of family members, It's virtually impossible. Trust me. I have over 35 years of experience preaching. My father and I have been fighting about the difference between impersonalism, personalism, Christianity. I mean, my father thinks I worship idols. All right? So all you can do, okay, now you respect what I've done, right? Right? I have some experience, right? The key to success is you state your case, and just like Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna states his case to Arjuna and then says, Yateshasi Tatakuru. I've told you everything, now you do as you like. There's no such thing as convincing. You can't convince anybody of anything. It doesn't work. Even somebody might say, oh, yes, yes, I accept what you say. Then as soon as you walk away, they're thinking, this guy's an idiot. I'm still going to do what I want. So allow me to suggest you state your case and then, yeah, let it go. You'll have a happier family. What? More questions? Yes. Correct. Yes.
I mean, it cannot be Krishna. And I think he came, the God came in form of Jesus and then Krishna and then and Muhammad and I mean, all form at different times. This is my thinking. I mean,
you're partially correct. Because Muhammad's not God. Jesus is not God. They're prophets. There's a difference between God and his representative. Okay? There's a difference. There's a difference between, say, President Obama and one of his secretaries or agents. He may represent him, but it's not, and he may have all the authority of President Obama, but there's a difference. So, here's where you're correct, if I'm allowed, okay? I don't want to, like you say, impose. But I am in the driver's seat, so I am allowed. Okay, so, yes, God does come in different times, in different forms. That is a fact. You're absolutely correct. And the particular type of presentation is dependent on the level of the people he's speaking to. What's the matter? What's it? What is there? Well, then you need special blessings. Make sure you get extra blessings for me. It can't hurt. It can't hurt. It can't hurt. May Krishna bless you, protect you, and heal you. You're welcome. Sometimes my blessings work. Sometimes. Well, not, you know. It took my wife like 9 months before my blessings worked. Yeah, it worked. My prediction came true. She got the job she wanted. So, let's say in the case of Jesus, and even in the case of Muhammad, what they taught was according to the level of the people they were at. In the case of our Hindu scriptures, again, Bible, Quran, these are ABCs. They're just teaching people not to kill, you know, just to be moral. Like, I think, you know, one of the Muslim things is don't sleep with your sister or mother. You know, so you can imagine who he's preaching to, right? Whereas you come to Hindu scriptures, immediately you're starting on a higher level. You all, you know, how many of you went to college, right? So when you went to college, they already knew, well, you went to grammar school, you went to high school. We don't got to start with ABCs again. We're expecting that you know this much. We're going to start from here. So the Hindu scriptures are like that. Now, even in the Hindu scriptures, you have your class A, class B, class C. So when you come to Bhagavad Gita and then Srimad Bhagavatam is postgraduate study. So it depends on what level you are. In the Vedas, you have, for people who are basically in the mode of ignorance, they have their scriptures. For people who are basically in the mode of passion, they have scriptures. And those who are in the mode of goodness, they have those. So it depends what level you're at, plug in. And as you were saying, so now your point comes true, progress. Try to get to the next level. My daughter used to play a game, Nintendo, and it had so many levels, right? I would only get onto level 2. She would get onto level 6, right? So our Hindu religion is like that. There are different levels. And you nicely made the point that you should try to progress to the next level. Batuk, would you like to play my harmonium? All right. Not you. Okay, here. Put this on. You go to the front door, driver's side. As soon as you get to the... He's got... Okay. Okay.